Okay, this hour we'll take your phone calls with Robert Young Pelton as we're basically predicting what's going to happen worldwide in 2015. Back with Robert Young Pelton, of course, we'll take your phone calls too. So, Robert, if you find Coney, what are you going to do with him?
Well, it's a two-way conversation. I mean, he may want to stay in the jungle. He may want to come back and get justice in The Hague. But based on what I did this year, you know, I went to South Sudan, and I met with the last guy that spent significant time with Coney,
right,
which is rebel leader Riek Machar. And Coney's a weird cat. He likes living in the bush. He's in the Central African Republic, Southern Sudan right now. He's working with another rebel group that is working to support fighting over there. And, he's always a player. And, you know, Invisible Children shut down. So the main charity that was designed to track him down has disappeared. And Coney's been out there for 20-some-odd years. So I imagine that when I meet him, it's going to be a very interesting conversation. But I'm sure he's still going to be out there.
Okay, let's take some calls. We'll pick it up by going to Jeff in La Quinta, California. Jeffrey, take it away.
Happy New Year, George.
Thank you, Jeff. You too.
I don't respect many people more than I do you, Mr. Pelton. My problem, I'm a veteran, both the Navy and the Army there, George. And we're not producing critical thinkers. And our problem is we've got a law of diminishing return of people that actually even know what's going on. And you watch the Jay Leno Streetwalkers or whatever you've got to do and say, who's the first president? And these people can't answer that. We have a president that's actually half white. So you would think that we have a situation here where he could address both nationalities in a show of peace just based on his accomplishments. Of course, we've never seen his accomplishments. I'm curious if they'll be in his library. But, you know, I'm thinking President Obama and Lance Armstrong are two peas in the same pot. It's just sad the way the American people get lied to or misrepresented, leading from behind. You know, I thought that's what you did at a different kind of a dance. This is crazy what's going on. My military friends are all disgruntled. I do volunteer work now, and it just breaks my heart that these people are up in the air. They're getting kicked out. They don't know what their future is, and they got a president that doesn't know either. And it's just sad. I mean, it really is just sad. So my prediction for 2015 is that America wakes up. You know, we've been fighting in this war for 13 years, and nobody's ever explained to the American people what a Sunni is, what a Shia is, what the various aspects of these religions. All we do is pour money over there. But you couldn't even ask a person in Congress the difference between a Sunni and a Shia, and they wouldn't even be able to tell you unless they sit on the right committee. I mean, we are just going in the wrong direction. And Obamacare, this is ridiculous, having to pay a $15,000 deductible. I just want to see some more critical thinkers like you, Mr. Pelton, that put the word out, that represents America with a smile and an open heart and an honest attitude like George, you do. It just saddens me, you know, because I have served my country. Hey, isolationism is perfect if we do it the right way, you know. I just wondered what your thoughts were on that.
Well, you're talking about two things. You're talking about people who have life experience who are being ignored. In other words, people who have seen failure or success but can't get into the system. In other words, vets not being hired to do critical jobs and making a good wage. And the second thing is a complete lack of respect for wisdom. And, you know, they talked about the great generation, people who fought in World War II, in which large groups of men and women were drafted, were exposed to a horrific environment, came back much wiser, much stronger, appreciated the country, and had a set of values and ethics that were forged by that traumatic experience. We've had those same experiences, except they've been handled by a very small, I think 1% of our population that actually served in the military under the volunteer system. So we're not as affected by people who have life experience. We're more likely to sit and listen to a politician who was born from a rich daddy explain how things work, or a commercial from a PR spin company. And I see this all over the world. When I sit with an elder in Chechnya or in Afghanistan or Somalia, I see a man who's got 50, 60 years of seeing how things work, realizes you can't fool people, whereas I come back to America and I get told things all the time, and I'm saying, that's not true. That's not true, but I can't stop that person or change it. So I think what we need is a sense of respect for people who have learned the value of honesty, who have life experience and want to do good things.
Are we going to end up winning one day, Robert? And I mean by that, I mean the people. Are the people going to end up winning?
Oh, you know, I watch those shows about Teddy Roosevelt when he was president. And, you know, granted, he was a rich kid and whatever, but I watched how people listened to what he said and the sense of leadership he gave versus what I see today. And I think our biggest failing is the young generation, the kids that are coming out of college or coming into the workforce, have to demand more of their leaders, their bosses, the media. You know, they have to vote with their dollars and with their opinions. And I'm just saying, until that happens, we're going to get fed the same pablum over and over and over again.
Next up, let's go to Sam in Rochester, New York now, east of the Rockies. Happy New Year, Sam.
Happy New Year, gentlemen. George, a huge fan.
Thank you,
Robert,
sir.
A very, very huge fan. I'm a student of history. Okay, I read a lot. And this is just my observation. What I'm seeing right now going on with the civil rights and everything right now, especially against the police officers and everything, it reminds me of what I read about in the 60s, about the riots and everything like this. I'm a firm believer, like, history is repeating itself in a lot of ways, you know? And another thing, too, another observation I wanted to make, too, was a thing Andy Warhol said, was that, you know, everybody's looking for that 15 minutes of fame. I think that's where, you know, the idea is coming from, with all the social media stuff where all these people are doing some crazy things, you know? And those are just my observations, guys. I just want to know what you thought about it.
Well, yeah, you're talking about people's knowledge base being created by a tweet or a news story, that when we actually fact-check it, we find out that information is not correct. And as you saw with the Michael Brown incident, you know, we got one version, and then we said, oh, no, it didn't happen that way. The officer was actually attacked, and then we got another version. But by then, the idea that black people were being brutalized and murdered by cops had become the meme, and the reality is that, no, it's not like that. And yet the entire nation was caught up in talking about it through social media. And
what do you think of social media, Robert, in terms of its ability to just gather up people?
It's a disease. It absolutely is a disease. If you walk down New York City and you look at people staring at their phones, I want to stop each person and say, what are you doing? What are you saying to another person that has any relevance or meaning? And they'll walk right by homeless people. They'll walk right into cars. And I'm just saying, social media is almost like the end of the Roman Empire, when we don't want to focus on serious things. We just want to focus on trivial things like the national inquirization of America. And the gentleman who was a vet who was upset, you know, men come back from war and they have families and loved ones and mortgages, and they want it to be right. You know, they want to be fought for something. And they see the crap that everybody's focused on, and they go, shut up. You know, what about my pension? What about when I'm 60, when you're 60? You know, what about the creeks? Are they clean? Our politicians are honest. These are the things that we should focus on.
You think we'd be better off without social network?
You know, I sit around a campfire, and a guy with a gray beard tells me a story, and then a 15-year-old kid tells me a story. I'm going to listen to the guy with the gray beard. On social media, I don't know who has a gray beard, you know? And that's the problem with social media.
And the guy with the beard will probably tell the better story, right?
He's probably not on the Internet. He's probably doing something productive.
Next up, we go to Gilbert, Arizona, west of the Rockies. Joe's with us now. Joe, go ahead, sir.
Hello, gentlemen. Interesting show. I've been thinking myself that I believe that our country needs a change in the way of some controlled isolationism, and I'm wondering what the guest thinks about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Personally, I'm against it.
Well, you know, there's two kinds of isolationism. One is isolationism that we refuse to get involved in other people's wars, and I think that's kind of the healthy isolationism. But then there's also the trade, and should we not engage in something, will someone else pick up the slack? And America has been very aggressive in forming trade partnerships, even through forcing warfare in places like Latin America or the Middle East. So there's a fine balance between staying isolated and letting countries like China or Iran or whatever suck up the gravy, or being very aggressive about exploring every option we have, you know, to partner with people.
China does seem to be that country that's picking up all these other deals.
Yeah, but the problem is, I mean, they're like the robber barons of the 1800s in America. You know, they have no qualms about going into a country, stripping its resources, cutting down its trees, and then
moving on
to the next one.
Yeah.
But at some point, their economy starts to grow. They're running into the same problem that every country has, where they can't do it anymore because other countries are doing that, and their consumers are demanding more. So China's in for a bit of a rough spell over the next 5 to 10 years. And we are joined at the hip now because we do so much business with China. We won't go to war with them, but we'll be elbowing them out in some countries trying to get at the resources that they're stealing. So I think we have some problems with China over the near future.
Let's go to Carlos in Carson City, California. Hey, Carlos, almost New Year's, pretty soon.
Yeah, Happy New Year. Happy New Year. Great show. I listen all the time.
I know you
listen,
do.
I got a question here. The social unrest that's going on in here between blacks and whites and whatever, the racial unrest, do you suppose that there is a higher power that's manipulating factors to foment the unrest and to justify a police state, perhaps a world government? The reason why I asked that is because if you look at some of the players involved in the unrest, you got Jesse Jackson, who's a Freemason. You got Sharpton, who's a Freemason. Trayvon Martin's father was a Freemason. On the other side, Zimmerman's father was also a Freemason. It's alleged that some of the cops involved in the Missouri episode were members of the KKK. So what you're seeing, I'm beginning to see a pattern here where you got a bunch of Freemasonic elements involved, and I don't think that's an accident. Why are there so many Freemasonic elements involved in this situation here? That's, one or two persons perhaps being Freemasons, like viable. When you see an overwhelming amount of people there, the Freemasonry involved here to foment unrest.
Well, we move into that, and of course, if it's true, you got a lot of Freemasons involved in this stuff, Robert.
No, I would answer the question. The gentleman sounds like he's Hispanic, and I'm saying, why aren't Hispanics rioting? Why aren't Asians in the streets throwing rocks, you know? Why is there no Asian Al Sharpton? And I have to say that this is a tired meme, the idea that even the term African-American is kind of curious because, you know, a lot of blacks don't come from Africa. So we tend to push this thing into the Al Sharpton arena of saying, this goes back to slavery, this has to do with Africa. But that's not really America. America is made out of every possible race and color and creed. So I think we exaggerate this stuff in the media because it plays well. We've got, you know, the clowns that drive this discussion, which I think is really exaggerated compared to what people are really thinking on the street. So I don't think it's a global conspiracy, and I don't think that America is being split apart by race, you know, by blacks versus whites.
Isn't the rabble-rousing, isn't that dangerous, Robert?
Yeah.
Big time.
You know, I love riots, because riots are interesting, because there are different people in riots. So there are people who are upset and they've got signs and they want attention because those signs are written for the media. So the media likes a good riot, but they don't start taking pictures until something catches fire. So there are people that are specifically there to burn things.
That's all. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, no doubt also, about that.
There's also people from the police who instigate to see who follows them and then arrest them because those are the violent ones. So the dynamics of anger and riots in America are very much structured for the media and driven by both the police and the protesters. But they're not naturally occurring events as most people think they are.
Let's go to Paul in Seattle, Washington now. Hey, Paul, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Well, Happy New Year, George. Happy New Year, Robert.
You too, Paul.
Thank you.
I'd just like to ask Robert a quick comment first on why don't they portray the lady who was the black lady who was killed in near the White House, gunned down, if they want to say that all the time, unarmed black lady gunned down with baby in the backseat of her car. Why don't they ever put that out in the media? And I want to ask Robert. You know, President Obama's first campaign, he said that we need a police force, a national police force. Do you think this is going to undermine the police across the country? I heard today that arresting people in New York was 66% down. So, you guys have a happy New Year, and I'll take my...
I'll tell you one thing. Knowing a number of police officers, and Robert, I'm sure you do too, they're a little skittish out there. First of all, they're in a cruiser. They're wearing a uniform. They're easily spotted. And you got a lot of wackos out there who are gunning for them. That's pretty dangerous, Robert.
Yeah, keep in mind that they have intel. I mean, I spend a lot of time with cops, you know, doing the rounds. They have intel, and they have people that are saying, okay, there are people saying shoot a cop. It's not like they're making this up. And their superiors are saying, okay, ease back. Don't get in people's faces. You know, don't sit out there by yourself on the side of the road.
Yep.
So they are in fear. If you remember the riots in L.A., they told the cops to just stay away. Like, do not show your face. The problem with that is that then the population loses faith in the police because when somebody is rioting, you want a cop there to help you, but the cop is actually aggravating the situation. I personally think the solution is to put more of the responsibility on security on the actual residents. And I know we don't like posses, we don't like militias, but who better to police their own neighborhood than the people of Ferguson?
I agree, but they're probably not trained, Robert.
You don't have to be trained. We do it in Afghanistan all the time. We do it in Iraq.
Arm them?
No. You give them. You remember the guardian angels? And,
oh yeah, Curtis Sliwa. I know Curtis.
Yeah. People who just have a presence, who walk down the street and ask, "Hey, what are you doing here? Why are you parked over here?" And join them with the police so that the police don't carry the entire burden of protecting a neighborhood and also isolating themselves. You look at a cop car today, it looks like a battle wagon. And that's not healthy in the long term for security in America's neighborhoods.
No, not at all. All right, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment with Robert Young Pelton. We're going to take final phone calls with him here before we get into our predictions open line show later on tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Here we go. Well, find out why Beyond Belief is one of the fastest internet-based television programs. It's out there, and you can watch it for free for a while. So take advantage of the deal. Go to this website, www.beyondbelief.com. Somewhere in there, you'll find the programs without my mustache. I've been getting emails about that, so they must be running all over the place. Beyondbelief.com. And welcome back to Coast and Robert Young Pelton with us. Final phone calls here. So, Robert, do you think there are some sinister forces out there trying to manipulate, trying to control?
Yes. I think people forget that there is a whole industry of polling, intelligence, marketing that looks at if you do this, people say that. And, you know, the whole business of politics now is built on perception and hot buttons and things like that. And our consumer choices, our political beliefs, the things that we read in the media are all built on what is designed to appeal to people, not necessarily what's true or what the right thing to do is. And that's why we feel like we're eating sort of synthetic food all the time. We never get a good meal because politicians don't really do things that have resonance. We don't feel that the country is going in a positive direction because it seems so superficial. So those forces are actually in business. You know, that's the same thing that drives the NSA when we say, oh, they're listening to our phone calls. Well, no, they're just measuring what we're doing and who we're talking to. The marketing companies that are watching you click on your internet links are all trying to figure out what you want to do and how you're affected by things. So, yes, that conspiracy theory or that sort of paranoia does come from well-entrenched businesses out there.
And there's been a report, too, that the CIA is taking credit for the UFO sightings in the 50s and the 60s, saying that they were the U-2 planes and stuff. Great cover-up, huh?
No, they're on social media, don't forget. All this stuff comes from social media from their site. Once again, there are things you don't know. I mean, you know, I have not been exposed to a lot of classified information, but there's many things that we don't know. But in the long run, we sort of find out that they weren't that important. What we don't learn, or what we should know, is what are we being told that's making us do something that we're not aware of? You know, why do we believe certain things? Why do we dislike certain people, certain countries? And you'll find very methodical campaigns to create hatred or distrust or, you know, consumption or lack of consumption. And these are the things we have to watch.
Okay, back to the calls we go. We'll go to Toronto now. David's with us. Hey, Dave, thanks for calling. Happy New Year to you.
Thank you, and Happy New Year to you. There's a whole bunch of things. My first question is, I like the way that you say that the United States is responsible for ISIS by disregarding 1,400 years of history of Islamic expansion. What I'd like you to put together for me is how the situation in Sudan, where it is, again, Islamic expansion, and Nigeria, which is, again, Islamic expansion, in Europe, in Britain and France, in Norway, in Germany, and, well, number one, credit to the United States, but overlook this this history that's going on. But before you answer that, what I'd like to address something that you also just said about, you know, people are making plans in this. My prediction for the future is that if you take a look at the media that's coming out, it's very, very anti-Islam with the American sniper and that's going on, also in international relations with the Palestinian state just being refused. What I think you're going to see is a backlash, and these FEMA camps that people are talking about, and, you know, we talk about it in every third or fourth show, is going to be used the same way as they used the internment camps for Japanese Americans and German Americans in the Second World War.
A lot of food for thought here, Robert.
Yeah, so first of all, you know, I wrote a 60,000-word magazine article for Vice, the first time it's been done in 21 years, on the history of Sudan, South Sudan, the expansion of Islamic violence into the South and the current problems. So if you go to vice.com and you Google my name or Saving South Sudan, you'll get a huge meal of really interesting stuff. But Islamic expansion is very interesting because it's mostly expanding into areas of extreme poverty and into areas where the government is corrupt or non-effectual. And it's not really expanding into Europe or into Western nations. You don't see a huge growth in religious conversion or even the same kind of animosity that you see in Africa. So you see the world has blank spaces in which people really don't have a lot of weapons, they don't have a lot of infrastructure or government, and it's very easy to push in there and bully those people and force them into doing things. And that's where you're seeing the movement right now. We are in that space. You know, we're in Iraq, we're in Afghanistan, we're in Africa. And we're battling out as if it's a war on terror, but it's actually part of a natural sort of ebb and flow of people's beliefs and ideas and tribalism. So I don't worry about it that much. What I do worry about is that why we turn this into a war. In other words, you know, Boko Haram is a gang of thugs that doesn't like the corrupt Nigerian government, but we support the Nigerian government, and we tip the scales in Boko Haram's favor because we appear to be oppressors. So we've seen a lot of that around the world where people intervene and actually accelerate something from a regional conflict into a sort of global conflict. Even Ebola, by sending foreigners into West Africa, we actually increased the spread of Ebola, which is a naturally occurring and self-extinguishing problem within West and Central Africa. So I can't answer all your questions, but what I can say is that we need to kind of throttle back on trying to rush into every area that is affected by an Islamic group or a violent group, whether it's Joe Kony or Boko Haram, because it's not in our long-term interest.
Why don't we permit those groups to flourish? Why don't we just annihilate them? And we could do that.
Because they're politically popular. It's, you know, it's like a guy robs a bank, and you say, let's go get that guy. He's a bad guy. And so it's politically popular to go after, I call it hashtag activism, you know. You know, 200 girls were kidnapped by Boko Haram, so let's send special forces and SEALs, and then quietly we get out of there because we can't handle the corruption. So the point is that we could annihilate them, but then there's an underlying social problem that we didn't know about when we got there. There's a reason why the Taliban took over Afghanistan, because the people that were running it were corrupt and brutal. So if we solve one problem, which is, okay, here's a bad guy killing innocents, but then there's an underlying problem that we can't solve. So it creates more and more problems as we run around the world. What we think are stomping out fires, but actually increasing these fires.
Is that much the same as Cuba? I mean, you know, everybody was somewhat happy that Castro and group were going in there to take out Batista, and then as soon as he got in, everything changed.
Well, Castro's like Putin. I mean, Cuba's a very poor country that has fed on the anger against America. An excuse for poverty is being sort of, you know, blocked by America. It's been a very popular destination for Canadians and other foreigners. The fastest way to get rid of communism there is to pour in Americans and investment and business, and people won't tolerate being poor.
Okay, let's move on. We shall go to San Jose, California. Jacob's with us now on Coast to Coast. Jacob, thanks. Go ahead.
Robert and George, commentators on the war in Afghanistan have said the United States sustained a horrible massacre, 38 soldiers going down in a single helicopter, and 25 of them were Navy SEALs, and seven of those fatalities were supposedly Afghan commandos. You were talking to George about, there's a small group of commandos and special forces in the Afghan military. Seven of these were on that helicopter, supposedly, but they, at the last minute, just before they took off, an out-of-theater commander swapped them out for ordinary Afghanis who went to their death. Do you think you'll find out whether or not this was a coast-to-coast paranormal foretelling of the future by this out-of-theater commander? That's why he swapped them out. Or is it betrayal of some sort? And will that commander ever be identified?
Well, first of all, you know, having done those missions, I can tell you that you have to rehearse before you go on a mission. So you can't swap out commandos who are designed to work with special operations troops, who actually practice going into every house and clearing a village. So it would be extremely unusual for someone to say, oh, you don't know what you're doing, get on this plane, and the guys that train get off the plane. And that particular crash, you know, is an outcome of war. I don't think there's any paranoia or any kind of conspiracy about it. It's very easy to shoot down Chinooks and these large helicopters.
Well, it sure is.
Yeah.
The world in chaos, Robert, isn't it?
Well, but it should be, and that's how you get change. You know, if the world was fixed, like, you know, 15th or 18th century Europe, it basically stalls the natural progression that leads to world war. So it's like a fault line. It's actually healthy to have constant change and turnover. It's actually very damaging, like we have in our political system, for things to be frozen and things not changing.
Let's go to Dan in Canyon City, Colorado now, first-time caller. Daniel. Go ahead.
Great show, and Happy New Year's, George.
You
happy
too,
New
Dan.
Year, Robert.
Thank you.
Robert, I have a question for you in regards to, I'm pretty knowledgeable in end time Bible prophecy, and I've studied it for quite some time, and I look at the things that are happening worldwide right now with, apparently, a lot of it has no real good solution. I mean, either way, it's a losing proposition. My question to you is, have you looked at some of the global events that are taking place from an end-time biblical prophetic standpoint? I know that the next major prophetic thing on the prophetic time clock is the Third World War. And in that Third World War, Russia is supposed to come down from the north and attack Israel. And I know with Russia having energy and money problems right now because oil is so low, Israel has an enormous find of natural gas over there. And I know that several years ago, when Bob Gates was the head of the Pentagon and the Mossad did a study on the world war that would take place between Israel and the proxies from Iran surrounding Israel. And they said that they expected that Iran would not directly attack Israel, but attack Saudi Arabia with dirty bombs so that their oil fields would become radioactive and their oil sales would be non-existent, which would benefit both Iran and Russia. How do you see that scenario playing out in the future?
Well, first of all, I think biblical predictions are fascinating because things like Gog and Magog and, you know, the apocalypse and things like that are actually well entrenched in a lot of, you know, historical predictions and not just the Christian ones. But the reality is that I don't think we're going to be around that long. I mean, I don't see this happening short term, and I don't see those nations even surviving. If there was to be a true apocalypse, it would really come from something much bigger than politics, you know, like a meteor or a major natural catastrophe, which could eliminate large areas. But I think to think that the world would end because of oil or a tiny country like Israel or Iran versus Saudi Arabia, I think doesn't really show the scale of what could happen on a much bigger scale.
Couple more calls here, and we are out of time. Larry in Cleveland, Ohio. Larry, it's your turn.
Hi, can you hear me?
Sure can.
Hey, I'm driving by this van. I'm out on Lake Erie, and it's a Baptist van, by the way. And remember when you had that guy in there who was talking about math?
Yeah.
And he said something. There's so many, you know, because every letter in Hebrew alphabet corresponds to a number, but there were so many, so much in there. He said you can get whatever you want out of it. But I specifically was talking about the 66 bowls, knops, and flowers that were in Exodus 22. Now, you look for a word of authority, and you guys got me thinking because I was thinking of in 1984, they had a ministry of truth building on there with a slogan, order out of chaos. And it was funny, too, because I think Obama actually, he quoted another president and said nothing happens by accident. And then his public relations guy said something to the effect that we're not going to let any catastrophe go unused. And it's funny, when you boil a frog, if you do it real slowly, incrementally, it may not be like a conspiracy theorist that, like, maybe the Masons all control it or whatever. But, I mean, you've always talked about the military-industrial complex, and you kind of wonder about that spiritual component behind it, you know?
Well, there's no doubt.
Yeah, you can't change. You got to change from within. Real change comes from within. And I guess I pray for the best and plan for the worst.
Well, that's pretty smart to do it that way.
But also, you know, one thing that's interesting is what people believe is a huge power. If you can convince people that a certain group is bad, that you have to go get them, or that something will happen if you don't do something, you can create an electrified change in people. You know, 9/11 is a good example of a singular incident that changed the world for a decade. And yet the actual incident was localized to New York with 3,000 people. Now, 200,000 people have been killed, and there's a million people living in refugee camps in Syria. That hasn't affected the world at all. So it's interesting to see what does electrify people, you know, in terms of visualization and fear versus what happens that doesn't galvanize people.
All right, Robert, let's take another call. Let's go to Tacoma, Washington. Joseph, good morning. You're up with us. Go ahead.
Good morning. I'll try to be as succinct as I can, George,
sure,
because I know you're running out of time.
Yeah.
By the way, Happy New Year to both of you guys.
You too.
You and Robert. The question I have in the moment, I'm going to just read off a couple of facts and let Robert respond to it if he can. Israel is about the only democracy in that area. We've got places like Iran, Iraq, Jordan, Syria, Turkey, Palestine, etc. They're all going against Israel. ISIS is actually at the door of Israel right now. Obama says he's a Christian, but he's never presented himself as a Christian, yet he's had over a dozen Islamic feats on the White House lawn. Obama himself calls it ISIS. He's bombing it at the moment, but he refers to it as ISIL, and ISIL actually means that country which will take over Israel. And Obama has said if push ever came to shove, he would back the side of the Islamics. And I could go on more and more, but I'll leave it at that. And I'm just curious as to what yours and Robert's would be on this.
I just think that the Middle East has always been a contentious and confused place, whether it's because of the colonials that drew the borders mm-hmm. or whether it's thousands of different ethnic groups. It's not going to be the thing that starts the end of the world. In other words, it always will be contentious. There always will be disputes. Places like China and Iran and the U.S. are much bigger powerhouses than anything in the Middle East. So while we're distracted by things in the Middle East, I think we should really focus on things at home, because that's the thing that actually affects our lifestyle and our health and our future and our opinions.
It's going to be an interesting 2015, Mr. Pelton.
Yeah, I look forward to it. I'm going to be busy, and I feel great. And it's a beautiful day today out here in California. So it's
cold. It's cold out here.
But, you know, this is the one day of the year that everybody wants to move to California, because we got the sunshine, the snow, the palm trees.
Everything
so
mixed up.
I feel very good about the future, and I hope people do too.
Robert, talk to you in the future, my friend.
Thank you, George.
Robert Young Pelton. Up next now, 2 hours of our predictions show. Throughout the couple hours, I'll be bringing up our 2014 predictions, and then we'll be talking to you about 2015.